One thing that is important to understand, though, that the one thing Alex Acosta did do is he did make him a registered sex offender in 2007, 2008. So that was public knowledge. And that brings some real questions to anyone that's been released in these new files. Anyone who is continuing to associate closely with Jeffrey Epstein after he became a publicly known registered sex offender, I think has some questions to answer.
Well, and to that, Amy, I will say, you know, as you know, I have a personal history on reporting this story. And I went through hell in 2002 with Epstein threatening me because I'd got to the Farmer Sisters. And I found it nauseating to suddenly see this fax from Jeffrey Epstein to Graydon Carter bashing me and the questions I'd been asking of him and Ghislaine Maxwell about the pharmacists back in 2002.
Let's be clear, because we've talked about this in detail, but back in 2002, you were writing for Vanity Fair. You were asked to do a piece on this up-and-coming millionaire, billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, and then you found the story of the Farmer Sisters.
Yes.
Epstein actually came into the offices of Vanity Fair.
Behind my back.
And you were about to have twins.
I was about to have twins. I was on bed rest. We were wrapping up the final sort of stages of fact-checking. The Farmer Sisters were definitely in the piece and their allegations. But what I did not know was that Jeffrey Epstein had sent my boss this fax, casting all these absurd aspersions on me. And that obviously it was after that that the Farmer Sisters and their allegations were cut. What I then found interesting, again, going back to what Eric was saying, that there were all these emails from all these guys after it was known that Jeffrey Epstein was a convicted sex offender. Even then, I found emails with another Vanity Fair reporter who's sadly dead, John Connolly, but ended up co-authoring a book with James Patterson, now my co-author, Filthy Rich. There are all sorts of correspondence.
It was called Filthy Rich.
Yes. There were all sorts of correspondence about John Connolly. And at one point, Epstein reaches out to Michael Wolff and says, shall we ask Graydon? In other words, Graydon Carter was part of the boys' club, in at least in Epstein's mind, that part of the boys' club, along with Elon Musk and Steve Tisch and Howard Lutnick and Richard Branson and, you know...
Branson, who is the founder of Virgin Airways.
Yes, and, you know, Andrew Mountbatten. You know, we just see over and over again in these documents, this is just one big billionaire's boys' club that, you know, treated women like objects. I mean, this, you know, discussion of, I don't want to even talk about it on here, the discussion of their body part. I mean, and you see Epstein writing, let's not put this down on paper too much. I mean, he was aware of that. But I do want to mention one thing, which is, as you mentioned, Ghislaine Maxwell is supposed to testify before the House Oversight Committee virtually next Monday. And I think we probably won't learn anything. I think she's going to plead the fifth. But in her habeas corpus filing that she's filed as part of her appeal, she does talk about 25 men with whom settlements were done. And she claims that they were pressured into doing these settlements because of the criminal proceedings hanging over her. I have always said that my sources have told me this, that there were a lot of civil settlements done behind the scenes with men who, and if those settlements had not been done, maybe they would be being criminally prosecuted.
When you say private settlements, you mean money settlements?
Yes.
With survivors.
Yes, with non-disclosure agreements.
And you
on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboot.fm.
Good morning. Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. We are broadcasting 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO-FM. Today is Monday, the 2nd of February 2026. I am Cecil, and thank you for joining us this morning. For those of you who would like to join in and be a part of our conversation this morning, it's 503-231-8187. Today is Monday, the 2nd of February. Some people recognize it as Groundhog's Day, and in remembrance of that, it seems like I am thinking of the movie Groundhog's Day, and you wake up and everything just seems to be same thing over and over again. There's so much that is happening and so much that is confusing. I'm grateful that you are here this morning joining us as part of our morning conversation. There's much that's going on. Thank you for listening. And where do we begin? There's the attack on independent media that we saw played out in as a result of what has been going on in Minneapolis with the arrests of independent black journalists. We can talk about that. There is much that is going on within our own region. And we saw the attack by federal agents on those who were gathered in front of the ICE facilities this weekend in Portland, the gassing of labor activists, children, and people who were out there to state their concerns about what's happening in our nations. We can talk about what's happening in Eugene and the results that are happening in that region as well. There is much that is happening. Perhaps before we begin, we can be reminded of why we are doing things. André Frédéric Amiel, a Swiss philosopher who died in the late 19th century, he said, life is short. We don't have much time to gladden the hearts of those who walk the way with us. So be swift to love and make haste to be kind. There's so much we have to talk about and so much that is happening in our world. I hope that you are being safe. I'm interested in hearing if anyone was part of the action in front of the ICE facility this weekend and your response of what's happening. Were you able to take care of yourself and those with you? Were people safe? And perhaps there are those of you who are part of what's going on in Eugene and might want to respond about what's happening in that community as well. Again, you are listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil. I welcome your phone calls and your perspectives about what's happening. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's hear from our first caller this morning. Good morning, Lenita. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for all your hard work with you and your engineer. Say, hey, Portland. I just wanted to sort of summarize. You're right. You did a wonderful job, Cecil, of summarizing what's going on in the Pacific Northwest. And Minneapolis continues to be a hot spot among other hot spots. I just want to interject that the overall objective to all of this is to stop the midterm vote, to stop people from voting.
Yeah.
And if I ran the Democratic Party, I would insist that people check their voter registration. I would have lawyers ready to counterbalance this whole theme of mail-in voting is fraud. That's the whole point. So when you have what little is left of democracy, and I just want to emphasize what little is left, and that is voting, that when you begin to impede the votes of the many, maybe that is the red line that he has to cross so folks could wake up,
so
other than messing with white folks' money.
Yeah, let me ask you, because you mentioned that about the midterm elections, and you know, in all of this, you know, there was, you know, the siege of ballots in Fulton County in Georgia, you know, that got some play, but it's sort of like, oh, they are really going after the opportunity to vote. And I think you have raised the issue about the midterm elections, and who knows what they are going to do.
Well, I think a bigger issue, and thank you for bringing up what's going on in Georgia, Fulton County. If you have not voted in a while, even if you didn't vote last year, there are people in power who want to prevent you from voting. So it's important to ensure your registration is on point. It's important to ensure that you have the ability to vote. Sort of like a grandfather clause they used to use in the South to keep my ancestors from voting. They're going to apply that nationwide to everyone. So again, if I ran the Democratic Party, I would launch a major campaign against this, and maybe that's part of this whole barrage. There's so much stuff going on that what happened in Fulton County should be the front page news every day, and it just gets drowned out in all this other stuff, which deserves as much attention, if not more.
Yes.
The ability to vote, what little bit we have left of democracy, is absolutely being threatened. And I don't know what's going on with the Democratic Party, but I would really like some opposition from the opposition party.
That would be nice. Opposition from the opposition party. Yes. Hello.
And I want to wish you and your listeners a very happy Monday. Again, much love to your engineer. We always got to give our props to our technical people.
Yes.
And thank you, Cecil, for all your hard work and your insight.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your work, and thank you for your work and for your kind words and for recognizing the work ahead. So take care of yourself and be kind to those around you. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM. I'm Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Our caller, Lenita, was reminding us, all of us, to be very aware of your status. Check to see if you're registered to vote. Those of you in Oregon and Washington, it's fairly easy in terms of registration and how to vote, but check to be sure. There are people who, we saw the federal administration go into Fulton County in Georgia. They want to re-litigate the 2020 elections, and we all know that elections are run by the states. The federal government don't have control of the ballots. So be very aware of that. And yes, their midterm elections are scheduled for November, and who knows what they're doing to make things more difficult. Let's hear what others have to say. Let's go to our next caller, and Santiago, good morning, Santiago. Hey, how are you? What are your thoughts this morning?
I'm kind of piggybacking a little bit on what Lenita was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there definitely is a push to definitely is a push to you know, to eliminate the midterm vote. But the where I have to push back is that the thing is that democracy isn't a noun. Democracy is a verb.
Right.
So the idea that they're taking away democracy to me seems kind of silly, because like the democracy we have is the democracy we make. Now I say that liberals in particular have made black and brown folks very complacent.
Well, let me
go ahead.
Before you go on, I think that's a very good point you just made about democracy. Give me your definition of democracy. You know, we throw that word around, and it's certainly more than like voting in elections, but what do you mean by democracy, and is that something we should be concerned about?
Well, I mean, democracy at the end of the day is the will of, is the will of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the will of the people overrules the establishment. I mean, whether we have the ability to vote or not, democracy still exists. Because if you look at, I mean, the civil rights movement was chock full of people who couldn't vote or people who could barely vote. Mm-hmm. But it was there. But it was their unification under a single idea, under a set of ideals that pushed them to move and think and act as a block. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're missing right now with all these protests. Not that the protests themselves are necessarily ineffective, but without a movement to back them up, they will essentially fold. Now, while we do not like what the conservatives are doing, the Republicans, because at the end of the day, you know, Democrats are following in line with Republicans, even if they're not really like saying it. But like, if we don't, the reason why Republicans have been so effective is because they have a movement behind them. Now, the movement is not great and it's terrible for most everybody, but they have a movement. They have something that unites them,
and
we have nothing. Go ahead.
And you're saying there isn't a similar type of movement forget about the Democrats, but is there a similar type of movement for the left? I mean,
because Republicans and Democrats killed it collectively.
Okay.
It was called socialism. I mean, go ahead.
Well, let's see what's happening right now. So you have people assembling, you know, on the streets, and you might have critique about these movements or organizations. You know, we could list them indivisible, you know, on and on and on. But are they movements? Are they attempts to put some emphasis about the move towards democracy? What do you make of those efforts?
Well, see, the thing is what they're trying, what they're doing, what a lot of what 50-51 and an Indivisible are about is protecting liberal democracy. Liberal democracy is what got us where we are.
And liberal democracy is define that, please.
Liberal democracy is democracy by the rich. Okay. Liberal democracy is capitalist democracy. It's the democracy, it's Western democracy. It's where it's the golden rule. Whoever has the gold has the rules. Now, you might have one section of the party, the one section of the ruling class, which is the Democrats, which, you know, rules from a slightly more generous place. But at the end of the day, they're still supporting wars abroad. I mean, we just had seven Democrats vote for ICE funding. You know what I mean? And these are supposed to be the opposition party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a, you know, and you don't see any outrage really on the behalf of Democrats. I mean, you see a lot more now that Renee Good and Alex Pretty have been shot, but for the most part, they've been silent. I mean, they were almost wholly silent when black. I mean, nobody knew about Keith Porter really until. I mean, somebody had to bring it up, you know, because
right.
Renee Good and Alex Pretty were all over the news. And it's just like, you know, as long as capitalism is the mainstay of economics, we're going to continue to have this problem, because capitalism is the economic arm of white supremacy. And we can't effectively fight what's going on unless we address, you know, capitalism, militarism, and white supremacy, racism.
I think I agree with you. Do you see that there's a movement addressing these issues? Even regardless of, you know, what one might think of, you know, 50-50 indivisibles, or, you know, move on, whatever, are they perhaps tapping into a concern of how people feel, and could we use that to advance? I mean, okay, they might be
absolutely
liberal.
We could use it. Go
okay.
ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead. Sorry. No. No, respond.
What I was going to say is that we could absolutely use it. I mean, it is tapping into something, mm-hmm. because ultimately at the highest levels, 50-51 and indivisible are connected to the Democratic Party. Now, a lot of local organizers don't want to believe that, and that's fair. The local organizers are the ones who are doing the work. But right. you got to understand that 50-51 and indivisible are essentially offshoots of the Democratic Party. The people who founded indivisible were inspired by the Tea Party. We all know that the Tea Party was a false flag. It was astroturf. Mm-hmm. So that's what really concerns me about indivisible and 50-51. But more importantly, it does have the potential. But we got to stop saying no kings and no oligarchs. We have to call it what it is: no capitalists. And that's where they're running into the problem, because, like, kings and oligarchs is just a figure of speech, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and on top of that, when the kings and oligarchs are talking, when the no kings, no oligarchs guys are talking, especially AOC and Bernie Sanders, they're talking about Republicans, which definitely are a problem. But capitalists exist as the ruling class over all of American politics. And that's whether you're talking about Democrats or Republicans, because they're both on the take from those people.
So let me ask you then, because it's, you know, I can understand no kings, you know, blah, blah, blah. But even just the term no oligarchs, isn't that an initial attempt, an attack upon, you know, the system we have, late stage capitalism, just the term no oligarchs?
No, it's not, because I mean, even if these capitalists fancy themselves as oligarchs, we're not living in a feudal society. You can call it techno-feudalism, mm-hmm. but techno-feudalism is just another word for capitalism. We have to stick to the situation that we're in, the situation that we have been in since the colonizers ended up on these shores. Has been a capitalist mode of production. It might not have fully been capitalism when they showed up, but it was on its way to capitalism when they came here and killed indigenous people, and they went to Africa and enslaved Africans. What set chattel slavery of Africans apart from slavery of other times is that it was a necessary part of the market in order for it to function.
Right.
That's what made chattel slavery different than any other kind of slavery. And that's what made conquering of all of these different land bases completely different than the conquering that had gone before, because it was a mode of protection for the imperial class, for the imperial core. And while it wasn't fully capitalist in its beginning, it is fully capitalist now. So if we don't call it what it is, capitalism, and we need to say no capitalists, we're not going to fully, because essentially we're allowing the people on top who have something to lose to define the parameters in which we attack the system.
Okay.
What made the civil rights movement so threatening, what made the original labor rights struggle between World War I and World War II so threatening, is that it was the people defining the struggle.
And, you know, I think, and I think that's a very good analysis of what happened. And I'm hoping, I don't know if that's the appropriate word, but what is developing is that this type of resistance and analysis begins to bubble up, and it will begin to develop. And the activism, the organizing that you're talking about, perhaps is happening. And we are on this journey. So we'll see what happens.
I don't doubt that it's happening on the local level for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that the local level organizing has to take it to the next level, because Indivisible would be nothing without the Indivisible as a whole organization would be nothing without the organizers on the ground. And it has to be the organizers, not the organization, who defines the struggle. Because when you look at the national, the difference between the national organizing committee and the local organizers is so far off. Even local organizers are like, they don't speak for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, Indivisible.
Organizers. Right. And I wonder, and this is perhaps another conversation. I think your recognition of what's happening on the local level as opposed to the national is right on, and that there's also often a disconnect. But I also realize that that those who are national organizers perhaps began as local organizers. And so what happened, how do you maintain the connections between local organizers and what's happening on the national scene? And how do you make sure that people are attentive to the needs of what's going on? It's an ongoing. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is because those national organizers, like I said, what I have done from studying Indivisible is that Indivisible has two organizations that are completely different. There's the local organizing that's a 501c3, and then there's the national organizers that's a 501c4. 501c4 is significant because they don't have to disclose who's donating to their organization, whereas the local do. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me super suspicious, on top of the fact that the organizers for Indivisible talked heavily about how they were inspired by the Tea Party. And we all know that the Tea Party was a Koch brothers AstroTurf.
Okay.
And that's what I'm saying is that, like, you know, when the people define the parameters for attacking the system, that's when they become afraid. That's why these cats are not afraid of these 50-51 protests on the whole, because there's a top-down organizing to it. But once the people define it, that's when we move into the next phase of struggle. But I think that we're going to need, like with the civil rights movement, while they didn't say it out loud, they were heavily influenced by socialist and communist organizing.
Okay.
And that's exactly who's being pushed out of the conversation on the national level.
All right.
Somebody as temperate as Bernie Sanders. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Hey, this, you raised a lot of points, and I appreciate your thoughts. And for a reminder of how we need to maintain connection on the ground with what people are doing. There's several other callers who are waiting to speak, so let's move on to them. Thank you, Santiago, for your thought and for your commitment. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I am Cecil. Let's go to our next caller. Janet, good morning.
Good morning. You know, Santiago has got it all laid out so supremely well, as succinctly as could be, because I could go running all over the map thinking of somebody like Jose Vega and what we're talking about. The labor rights movement is huge. But what I had been thinking about, the timing is astoundingly imploding. I thought about the Ides of March and then how one time when I was living at the coast, these neo-Nazi bikers broke into my house and put a knife in my counter and said, "I'm going to be sorry." And the people behind them said, "We like those guys. We don't know about you." And then what happened was they beat the hell out of each other after a while. So it almost seems like a lot of the rats are jumping off the ship. And then the causality of what's been happening is so huge and imploding that maybe like the cheese stands alone. And I think that Santiago's got it exactly right. And there are, and then things are rising up. I think Jose Vega is a really, really super duper amazing, wonderful, shining example of what can happen when people who are rising up from the people, and we have a people's party going on, and it's starting to really look like it's not going to be able to kind of be look like just a few little outliers, but starting to get very a pretty good look as a precedence for what's going to happen next. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much, and stay safe and stay committed. I appreciate your work and your spirit, Janet. And let's go to, I believe, Artie is next.
Yeah, hello, Cecil.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm kind of distraught about the current events and frightened. Mm. You know, not just for myself, but for everyone.
Yes.
But you called for some definitions. How do we define democracy?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I would say that it's not a matter of the will of the majority as much as it is the needs of the majority are met through democracy.
Mm.
And then the opposite of democracy, I say it's fascism. That is, the ruling class, despite what party you belong to, make the decisions in the government. So fascism is a form of government controlled by powerful business interests,
mm-hmm.
and name principally on the right wing. It's not entirely, but mostly it's the right wing ruling class leadership who stand above it all and control our government decision making. Yes. So I wanted to put that definition out there. The needs of the majority are met.
Mm-hmm.
Not the matter of 50% plus one is the will of the majority.
The will of the majority, yeah.
Yeah, it's the needs of the majority are met. And its opposite, I say, is fascism, a form of government controlled by powerful business interests. And I want to say something about definition for capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But basic capitalism is age old. It's the separation of labor. Some people are good at one skill, and that's what they, you know, they devote their lives to.
Right.
And then the form of commerce is set up so that wages for different kinds of employment are met, and then they use the wages to buy the things that they can't meet for themselves.
Okay.
It's an interaction. That's basic capitalism.
Yes.
But then there's monopoly capitalism. There's colonial capitalism. There's Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism. Remember that?
Yes.
You have a natural disaster, and the capitalists rush in to take a disaster capitalism.
Yeah.
And there's the latest one is called surveillance capitalism.
Mm.
So that it has to do with controlling the commercial airwaves to introduce a system of commerce that surveillance capitalists exploit in order to capture a market.
Yeah.
But basic capitalism is it's fundamental.
Yeah.
It's how a division of labor. Some people are good at one thing, carpentry, farming, origin, and then they focus on that. They set up a system of commerce so that we can buy the things from other people who are good at the other kinds of skills that make up an economy. And so these are basic definitions that we can say, here's what we're doing right, and here's what's going wrong. And democracy, getting back to that term, it's getting the needs of the majority met rather than the will of the majority, as if you get in a Democratic Party leader and they're not going to turn around and serve the ruling class.
Right. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your
definition. I hope that helps people.
Well, let's see.
Let me repeat one thing. But basically, the ruling class is the most powerful business industry, and that's our right wing. But on the left wing, there are plenty of powerful businesses as well. And I say we have a few in Oregon. We have a number of them who call themselves Democrats.
Okay. And thank you so much for your call. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. We're hearing your thoughts. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And next up is She the Spirit. Thank you for calling, and thank you for your patience.
Yehuru Sasa. That means freedom now, which I learned from my brothers in prison in the 80s. So you... Aluta Continua for Yehuru Sasa, freedom now. I call because I want the audience to know that fascism is nothing new in America. As a matter of fact, I took a deep dive into some of my research and my involvement with the prison industrial complex. But before I make my statement, Mr. Cecil, I'd like to do something I've never done before for your audience, and that is that I want to give a small grant, matching grant, for anyone who contributes any amount of money up to $1,000, because there is an institution called Coffee Creek I just recently found out about, and I found out that it houses mostly girls. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping I'm correct about that.
Yes, mostly women.
It is mostly girls?
No, it's female, yes.
Females, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't heard many politicians or black leaders speak about it, but I know that it's another form of captivity in that black girls are usually the last ones whose voices are heard. And since I started in 1980 with my brother's keeper, I started that to address the issues of black men in prison. And now watch the evolution of the prison industrial complex in America, starting with the convict leasing and the sundowner towns. You know, if you were caught outside on the roads after the sun went down, anyone could arrest you, and you go to prison, go to jail. You could be chained to somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were considered a felon, and then came the peonage slavery, and this was after the Emancipation Proclamation.
Say that, I didn't hear that term. What type of slavery?
Peonage.
Oh, yes. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, you heard about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
And that was after the proclamation when we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule. But most black people had nowhere to go, right? So
well,
people
I don't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to add on to what you're saying. It's a very important point that, and you're well aware that the 13th Amendment, which, you know, we were taught abolish slavery, abolish it except for it as a form of punishment. And so we see,
the
legacy of it. So,
right,
so
and that's what that's going to lead me up to the point that I wanted to make with regards to the evolution of our captivity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at peonage slavery, they could chain you to their house at night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then let you loose during the daytime so that you could be. The man and woman, the slaveholders who could have you under peonage slavery, could lease you out, lease your body out to work for another plantation or another business or whatever, right? But you had to be back to that house that you signed a contract with. Now, remember, most black people didn't really know how to read or write during the peonage slavery. But they will put their X there or scribble something down, but still the Congress actually recognized it as a formal contract because there were a lot of lawsuits that were filed on behalf of the people that were involved in the peonage slavery.
Yes.
And, I mean, it was really a horrible thing that any person, if you were caught after sundown, anybody could take you and consider you a convict and have you locked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you could work for free, and you could be loaned out to anybody for any of their business that they were promoting or they're on their plantation. The thing that I want to bring up is that We have seen this type of pulling people off the street and throwing them in jail before. So what ICE is doing, they should not be doing. But it's nothing new. Yeah, but because it was happening to black people back in the day, a couple of hundred years ago.
Yeah, those who, you know, went and rounded it up, ex-slaves. Yeah.
Like Stokely Carmichael said, remember? He said being black is a prior felony, okay? I learned that from him. That was my man. Before he changed his name to Kwame Ture, he still was my man, but he taught me a lot. So then we get
and we have people like Langston Hughes in the 20s and talking about, well, fascism isn't anything new to America. It's something that Negroes have experienced since the time they were brought over here.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned that word Negro, I want to let you know that's a Greek word that means dead. I just learned that about a year ago. I wrote some of these things in the article. I used to be a journalist, so I'm standing with all the journalists that are being involved lately with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But the word Negro actually means dead. That was taken from the Greek, because in Greece, when we were in captivity in Greece, they had us in what they called a necropolis, which means city of the dead. That was the strictest form of segregation. So in the 1920s, when they came up with this term Negro, it was like referring to us as dead people, because we didn't know our history. We didn't know where we came from. And that's a subject for another whole show I hope that you might do in the future.
Oh, thank you.
But getting back on the on prison industrial complex, after you mentioned the 13th Amendment, I hope you saw Ava DuVernay's movie, 13. They allowed for us to be enslaved, and so their minds got to working with how could we have a whole country full of places where we can enslave these black people and then pull them out to do work for us, such as in California recently in firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
California goes and gets the firefighters that are black that are incarcerated to put out their fires. Around about the 80s, when they were picking up people for smoking a plant, I started thinking about, these people, because I knew people that were like good men. They had 5 and 6 children. They would work all during the day and week. And then if a cop came by and saw him sitting in his car smoking, he all of a sudden becomes a criminal, and he's eligible to be incarcerated. There was one man that got 25 years because he had a little over the amount that the cops thought he should have. Mm-hmm. And he was a hardworking man, and they put him in prison for 25 years.
Thank you. I mean, when you share that information, I think it's also important to remember. Thank you for raising that for so many people who have been sentenced for possession of marijuana. So many, and with the legalization in many, many states and jurisdictions, there continues to be a need for those who have that, who have been sentenced, who have that conviction on them, for their records to be clear.
I totally agree with that. They should, because it's a plant Mother Nature puts on this earth for people that want to take it, Because if you can kill the baby in your womb, and they consider it a right, but if you put a plant in your body, they consider that criminal. There's something depraved about that way of thinking. But the other point I wanted to make, too, is about the feminine face of captivity. You know, Bob Marley, mostly in the decade of the 70s, he sang a lot of songs about our captivity, because he knew, like most of us that have studied history, the real indigenous Israelites were African black people from Ethiopia. And most of the promises made to Israel were made to the indigenous Ethiopian African people. Okay, and then when we came here in slavery, I noticed that Lenita made a comment about the slavery, and I wanted to add to that the base for the stock exchange was in England, and there were four cities where chattel slavery was allowed and where people could make money licensing slaves and registering slaves. And that was Bristol, Birmingham, Liverpool, home of the Beatles, although I'm not implicating them because John Lennon was definitely for black freedom, and London. So they didn't have slavery there, but the ships would leave from London and go to Africa, the port, especially along the Gold Coast, which is now Ghana. The Dutch and the French and the British had fortresses built there, and they would pick up the Africans and then bring them down to the Americas. But the other point that I was thinking about all of this since I was a journalist since 1980, and I wrote so many articles about the prison industrial complex and the captivity of the indigenous Israelites here. Benjamin Netanyahu's people, for example, most people do not know that over almost half of the prison population in the Israeli town that used to be our town, it was used to be home to the black Israelites. And the people that are in prison now, did you know that almost half of them are black Ethiopian Israelites? I just found this out during this my last 6 months retreat into her deepness, okay. Which is when I go into learning about the captivity of our people.
Hey, you've shared a lot this morning, a lot to digest, and there's so much there, and I want to honor, you know, your research and all that you're doing. So if we could conclude this part of
sum
the conversation, yeah, and then
okay, sum it up because
later.
You're right. I do. Yeah. I've learned so much, and I want to share so much with people. But regarding Epstein files, what they're hiding too. this is what I was getting to.
Okay.
All these forms of captivity.
Okay, now you know you went all over the place, and now to Epstein. So okay, go
well,
ahead.
Well, it's going to go back to slavery and captivity. A lot of people do not realize that what Judeo-Christian means. I know you've heard that term, right?
Yeah. I'd like us to narrow our conversation right now because you've shared so much this morning, and I think it's very easy.
It's all related.
I know it may all be related, but people might be losing the link. So if you can share
okay, well,
one thing.
Okay, let me close it up. Let me try
close
to close
it up.
The reason why I brought up Epstein and I'm relating this to slavery, most people don't know that Judeo-Christian means Jewish Christian. Jewish people owned black slaves. That's the point I was getting to. And most people don't know that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your points and for raising these many, many points here and talking about the role that people have in terms of liberation. Thank you, She the Spirit, for your research and all that you've done. And we will look forward to more conversation later on. You are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I am Cecil. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We began our conversations this morning by trying to reflect on what has been going on in our nations in the last few weeks. We began by some reflections about the increased agitation by federal troops, federal agents, not only in Minneapolis, but also throughout the nations. We have seen increased attack by federal agents on many cities and many communities, and people continue to be worried and are struggling to build safe environments for themselves and for their neighbors. We have seen so much that has been happening, and the need for us to continue to mobilize and to protect our communities. I hope that in the days ahead, that people will continue to take care of themselves and their neighbors and their families and friends. We have seen how people here in Portland who gathered outside of the ICE facilities were attacked by federal agents with chemical thing they sprayed upon people. Families and children were also impacted. We are also aware of the increased activities happening throughout Oregon, particularly in Eugene. And I am interested those who have been, who were either in Eugene or those who were a part of the demonstration here in Portland this this weekend, to hear some of your thoughts about that. We began this morning by also just noting the continued attack on media by the administration, by the arrest of journalists in Minneapolis. And for doing their jobs of reporting. Also to note that because the legacy media have sort of like caved in to the to this autocratic regime, that a lot of the information depends on independent media. Independent media such as this media station, KBOO. There are many people who are not beholden to corporate interests and are seeking to allow voices to be heard, and that the will, I think of our earlier caller, the needs of the people are met. So I thank you all who have been dedicated supporters of independent media, who have been members of this media station. It is so important, and we realize that it is so important that we continue to speak freely, to allow our voices to be heard, to share with our neighbors and our friends what is going on. As a couple of callers have shared this morning, it is so important to not only be aware, but to report of what is going on around you. As people need to have their eyes figuratively and literally open to see what's going on, and to be able to report, to share what is going on, and how their communities, their neighborhoods are under attack. I am so proud of how people are standing up, particularly those who have not have allowed their voices to be heard, who are perhaps afraid. I am encouraged by seeing people on the street corners, people of all ages, older people who are standing out and with signs and saying, this is who we are, and we need to have our voices heard. I am encouraged and inspired by younger people who are walking out of their schools, who are saying that we are here, that we deserve to have our voices heard, and our families and our communities need to be protected, and we need to make sure that federal agents are not continuing to harass our families and our communities. There is so much to be done, and so much that needs to be done. So thank you all for continuing to stand forth and to be truthful to what you have to say. There is so much more we have to say and do. I'm reminded perhaps of the words of a social critic who wrote many years ago, nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. Nothing we do however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we must be saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as it is from our standpoint. Therefore, we must be saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. Reinhold Niebuhr wrote those words in The Irony of American History. The title of that book, The Irony of American History, I think is perhaps appropriate. We share this morning in our last conversation, I think with our last caller, about the irony of American history, she, the spirit. I noted, I observed by, we are a contradiction in this experience that is known as the United States. We are a contradiction of hope, but also we are a nation of despair. We are a nation of people who want the best, but we are also a nation that has been characterized by violence and torture. So the irony of American history is that in spite of our aspirations, we need to deal with those things which are our faults. We need to acknowledge them, we need to recognize them, and then, and only then, can we begin to mend our ways. But it begins with acknowledgement of who we are and a willingness to confront the reality of the horrors and the joy of who, of what this experience is. The irony of American history is that we are many things, that we respond to many actions. Let's continue to work for the wholeness of our community. Let's continue to stand up and resist authoritarian regime. Let's stand up, as one of our earlier callers reminded us, for that which we believe that we are called to be. Times can be risky. Things can be very frightening. But in the end, we are saved not by outsiders, but ultimately by ourselves, by looking at after one another and supporting our communities. So friends, when we are discouraged, when we feel that we are overwhelmed, let us look towards one another. Let us look towards how we can help and support one another. The journey is hard, it is difficult, and it may seem as if we just keep on doing and things do not change. But things do change, and that is because of who we are. Let us be guided by that which we hope for, and not be discouraged by that which we see. My friends, let us continue to work and do the good work. Let us continue to be inspired by who we are and what we are called to be, and let us be reminded that life is short, and we have never too much time for gladdening the hearts of those who are traveling the dark journey with us. Oh, be swift to love, make haste to be kind. I'm Cecil Prescott. You have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. Continue to support our radio station. Continue to support our neighbors. Stay tuned for continued inspired news and information here on your community radio station. Thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Take care.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.